Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day. Don't forget, as we get prepared to talk in just a moment to Wesley Woodyard, that we will have a ton of pregame leading up to kickoff on Sunday. Not the late start this Sunday. Noon kickoff over at Nissan Stadium. But the coverage right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and I'm not going to read this word for word because clearly Max is, yes, doing the copy. Max Herz and Calvin Smith will be anchoring the coverage to kick off the first 2.5 hours. That'll be from 7 a.m. until 9:30. And then
I don't have to get up early.
Yeah.
It's good.
There you go. And then things shift downtown at George Jones on 2nd Avenue, where our pregame show will be from 9:30 until 11:30, and that'll be Jared Floyd Reese and Forever Titan Chris Sanders. Don't forget our own D-Mace on Morning Drive. D-Mace and Chris Johnson will be the 12th man for the game on Sunday. Our NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Let's head over to St. Thomas Sports Park, the man who had a huge play in the win over the Chargers on Sunday. Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard is on the line. Wesley, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Hey, you've been doing this. We're doing fantastic. You've played in a lot of football games, and I suspect probably some crazy endings in your lifetime at every level. Where did that one stack up?
That's definitely a top three finish, man. You know, I've had been around some great football games here and then out in Denver as well, but that one last week was definitely one for the records and one to remember.
No doubt. That's back-to-back years. The finish with the Chargers has been exciting, right?
Right.
I know you came up on the wrong end in London last year, but holy cow, they've been fun to watch at the end.
Yeah, man, without a doubt, man. It's because you get two teams that know how to play the game of football. We made the playoffs the year before that. The Chargers have been making the playoffs a lot of years in the past 10 years. So they know how to win. And, you know, we're just trying to use this momentum just like they did last year to propel them into the playoffs. You know, this was a pivotal game last year in both of our seasons just like it was this year. So we got to use this momentum and ride that on and just keep stacking these dubs.
Peel back the curtain for us radio dudes that don't get to experience what you experience every Sunday. And thank goodness for you guys. We're doing this. Take us through what it's like in the huddle and as the game is getting close and the Chargers are right there and they have first and goal. And I mean, what are you guys talking about? What's your mindset in the final minute of the game trying to keep them out of the end zone?
Oh, yeah, right then and there in that last seconds, man. As players, we're all, you know, screaming out. We're talking to each other, hey, be alert for this. All while we're waiting on a call until we can give over more checks and more things that we can look forward to. But a lot of guys are calling out plays. I know me, myself, calling out plays, or Logan's calling out plays. But more importantly, it's the mindset. And that's something that I can vividly remember hearing me and Kenny and Jarrell, too. Like, it's a mindset. Everything's happened for a reason. You know, they don't have to score. I know that's what I was preaching. You know, every blade of grass, we got to defend. So little things like that to try to get your mind ready before the play starts. And then all of a sudden the call comes in. Now we're echoing the call. Now we have to communicate a little bit more. Hey, you need to do this. Hey, drop here. Do this. Do that. And it's just little things that get you locked in. And when that play comes, somebody has to go out there and make that play happen.
Wesley, we were discussing this. And, of course, again, we're sitting where we're sitting on Monday, where you can go back through everything. But one thing that was an interesting decision at the time was with the runoff coming after the review.
Right.
They didn't have any timeouts, but you guys elected to take the timeout. Did you think that was a good way for you guys to sort of reset that mentality you were talking about? Because there's an argument the other way, put them in sort of the frenzy, make them have to scramble, but you guys were able to regroup as well.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's a good thing. A lot of people have been asking me, like, hey, did that mess up the Florida game, timeouts here, penalties here and there? And I'm like, man, actually, as a defensive unit, it gives you more time to get your thoughts back in order and get your breath. That's the most important thing because they drove the ball down the field. So you're a little bit antsy, a little bit drained just off of the them making plays. And once they slow the game down, that makes the defensive unit home back in and focus up. And, you know, that last situation with those time, calling timeouts, hey, man, it worked out in our favor. We got a chance to get off the field. Big Jeff got a lot of pushback. into the backfield. I was able to come off the edge and strip the ball, and, you know, Jarrell Casey ran away with the goods.
Did you know right away, Wesley?
Oh yeah. I knew right away. When Jeff, you know, especially looking back on the film, I can give more greater details now, but Jeffrey got a lot of push up the middle, which caused him to, you know, change his footwork. So he was going in the A-gap, and it made him bounce out a little bit wider. And by doing that, you know, he's trying to put two hands on the ball. So I'm coming off the edge at this time, and in my mind, I'm like, let me get my hand across him and pull him back away from the goal line. But in doing that, I'm like, oh, there's the ball. So I reached my hand out, popped the ball out, and immediately I knew it was a fumble. It was just that if he would have got on top of the ball in the end zone, that would have been a touchdown. So that was what I was worried about. But I saw it hit Jarrell's stomach, and I knew we were in good hands.
There was another thing that was floated out there, and Mike Vrabel was trying to go back through all of his thoughts, and of course this is a frenzy going 100 miles an hour at the time. But did they float the idea at you guys as a defense to let them score at all?
No, not at all. Heck no.
And you guys would not have had anything of that. You guys wouldn't have wanted that either, would you?
No, not at all. It's, hey, defend every blade of grass, make them kick a field goal. That's their best outcome that they can get in that situation. They're not winning the game on us, and we're not letting them score, especially not with not that many timeouts and about 30 seconds left. Heck no. We got to keep them out.
Yeah, that wasn't a no. That was a heck no.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Just real quick, you brought up Big Jeff. I mean, look, anybody that said they knew that's what it would look like the first time out there, they're Pinocchio. Give me a break. Now, maybe you guys, because you've been around him watching him work to get to this point, but all of us and fans, give me a break. How could you have seen him having that impact that fast? What about for you guys? I mean, tell us. I mean, what did you think you were going to get out of him in his first NFL game?
I'll tell you what, from players, he had a short leash because he walked around here this whole time since he came back in OTAs and everything. He talks more trash than anybody. And we were like, you act like a veteran and you haven't even stepped on a football field. So we'd be like, young man, get on the field first. So he definitely earned some stripes and opened up some eyes. But we've been seeing it in practice. Last week he had a really good pass rush that let people know, let our coaches know, hey, he's ready to go in the game. So that's what we need from him, man. That's what he got drafted that high for, to make those impact plays and to continue to anchor down the defensive line.
Wesley Woodyard is with us, the Lumberjack here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And you got a lot of young linebackers in that room with you you guys, but Cam Wake comes in as a free agent this year. What have you learned out of him having Cam Wake around?
Man, you know, Cam's a really great vet inside the locker room. You know, his locker is we put a space in between us. We call that the veteran locker. That's what happens when you get 10 plus years. You get a bonus locker to hold over all your extra envelopes, your junk, all your junk mail that you get sent in, your new packages. So, you know, Cam's, man, he's a competitor, man. You know, coming from Miami, they didn't get a chance to make the playoffs that many times. If they made it once, I think so, maybe one time. But anyway, I say that to say this. You know, he's a guy that comes into work every day trying to practice hard, trying to get everybody better, and he wants to get into the postseason. So he's giving it his all, and I think that's something great that our young outside linebackers need to see, that, hey, here's a guy that's played 14 years in the NFL, and he comes to work every day like it's year one. And that's all you can ask for a guy coming into a new team, that they continue to do the things that got them brought here and continue to pull other people up with them.
You're one of the leaders on this defense. How much pride do you guys have holding opponents to 20 or less so far this season?
It's big for us, man. That's something that we come out every week and we talk about. Limit the opponent chances to score. If they get in the red zone, make them kick field goals. And that's something that's never going to change no matter who we play. And last week, man, we focused on one of our keys being good on third down, and that didn't happen. You know, that allowed the Chargers to stay in the game, and that's something that we got to continue to work on. The third down, and continue to make sure guys not score in the red zone and they kick field goals.
How nice was it for the offense to give you guys, you know, put some points up and give you guys a little bit of a cushion to work with?
It was great, man. Truly a full-fledged team effort to pull that victory off last week, and that's all we need, man. Everybody continue to play hard and play together and play for one another, and I don't think anybody will be able to come in between us when it comes to this season, man. You know, sky's still the limit. We have to just make sure we take advantage of the opportunities that we have in at hand. And this week, it's the Buccaneers.
Wesley, I know you've got to hit the practice field, but let me just say this. Everybody has loved covering you and talking with you. It's conversations like this, but let me also say this. Keep up the good work in the community, too. Everybody really appreciates what you do away from the football field as well.
Oh, man, I appreciate it so much. Hey, you got to get, just like the game of football, you got to go in there and make a play. It's the same thing with the community. You got to go in there and make a play and make something happen for a greater good.
Hey, I love it. Hey, go have fun on Sunday. Go get another win, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, Titan up.
All right, that is Wesley Woodyard, Titans linebacker.
The Lumberjack.
Hit the practice field, and that was pretty cool. Kind of, I'm just talking, you know, I was getting the juices flowing here and him talking about just kind of, think about watching, but just think about what it's like to actually be in that action, you know, to be right there as that final minute played out, which was complete chaos.
I'm sure. It's a whirlwind. Unbelievable. Yeah. It's interesting, though, that nobody even floated to the defense. Hey, thinking about letting him score.
Honestly, when that came up,
I was very surprised.
I think a defense.
I never crossed my mind.
Like, I didn't think about
ever
that.
Watching. Like, I never thought. I think it came up in the Monday presser. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember the three of us were like,
If I'm a defensive player, as much respect as I have for my head coach, I'm looking at him, telling him he's number one, and then I'm lining up. There is no way I'm letting them score.
Well, you heard him say, heck no, twice. I mean, there's no way.
Teams have done it.
I know, and I understand there's a strategy to it, but
when you're
this defense that has played so well, there's no way you're
– And the fact that the Chargers can't run the ball very well.
But they're going to go up four. I mean, that's even – that's a different scenario.
And they had no timeouts left. If they had three and they could milk the clock – and kick a field goal to win it.
Right.
And not kick a field goal to tie it.
To me, the situation didn't even apply to that.
I agree.
I didn't even understand that whole narrative that came out. It's been out there this week. I mean, honestly, I thought he answered it pretty nicely. I thought he could have said other choice things. Because I never, ever thought that watching that game. That never even crossed my mind.
Yeah,
I never had the notion of, you know, they should probably maybe – now I'm looking at the clock. Maybe they should just let them score and then try to get it done on offense. No.
No, because I think the way the game ended, as crazy as it was, but the defense holding, that does more for a team than anything. Because that right there has been their bread and butter, has been defense. That's why I asked him about 20 or less. I mean, they've done it in every game. So I think that was huge for the morale of the team. I'll also say this. Listen, we've had Wesley Woodyard on before, and I know you guys have talked to him a lot over the years. That is a guy you love to have in your locker room. And I would love to see, as long as he wants to play football, he stays the Tennessee Titan. Because even though he doesn't play every down anymore and they use him in a different role, he's so important to that locker room.
He's a glue guy, man.
Yep.
Every room needs a glue guy. That's a glue guy.
There's a reason he's been a captain, I believe, since he's been in the league, right?
Oh, every level. He's always – I mean, that's how he's wired. Willie, you got a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right, let's tell you about Lee Company. Predators playing a lot of home games during this stretch. They've got another one tomorrow against the Minnesota Wild, so that means our whole gang will be down there in Smashville again. And all throughout next week, there's three more home games, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And my point is, Lee Company's a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators. You'll see them around Bridgestone Arena. You'll hear it with our coverage on 102.5 The Game of our radio crew. They do a tremendous job in support of the Predators, and they do a great job in our household as well. And I know many of you listening know what I'm talking about. They do a great job with your heating unit, your cooling system, your plumbing and electrical systems as well. And I've been saying it. Last night, you probably had to kick on the heat. And maybe you kicked it on, and you're like, oh, man, it's been a while since I had it checked. It's not working efficiently. It's not working properly. Well, we're just getting started with the cold weather. So call the number that I say every day on the show, 567-1000 for Lee Company. Keep it in the back of your mind, 567-1000, and call now to get your heating unit checked before you get into a crisis situation, because it's going to get more than a little chilly in the coming weeks and months. So Lee Company is a fantastic group because they also offer other programs as well, to where you have a yearly system. of staying on top of these things. And believe me, I'm one that needs some help in that area. Lee Company has given us that help. 567-1000 for Lee Company, or go online and make an online appointment at LeeCompany.com.
Big Jeff got a lot of pushback into the backfield. I was able to come off the edge and strip the ball, and, you know, Jarrell Casey ran away with the good.
You want a bag, you get a bag. You need a bag, you get a bag.
Less than 1 yard, good stuff from him. A lot of you, most of you, have been accustomed to hearing Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday at high noon. He's going to actually have to be moved to tomorrow at 11:30. So a little scheduling conflict with Tim Hasselbeck, and just wanted to pass that along. So he will be with us tomorrow at 11:30. Silly Underdog Picks at noon. That should be a lot of fun with Chris Sanders hitting on Vanderbilt.
Sure, he called us all and let us know, too.
Yeah, he called me from Gatlinburg on Saturday.
Right, because he and the girlfriend were headed up.
Yeah, there. Both of them. They were both on the speakerphone.
What's funny is, did his girlfriend not get on the air and say it wasn't her pick and she didn't think it was a good pick?
Yep. But they were in Gatlinburg watching the game because of his pick. So, speaking of Tim Hasselbeck, he was on NFL Live a couple of days ago, and of course they got into this Titans-Bucks matchup at Nissan Stadium at noon on Sunday, and of course the quarterback situation where Jameis Winston was taken number one overall, Marcus Mariota was the second pick after him, and where they both are in year five of their careers.
When you look at those two, because we talked about the season sort of as a litmus test, which is more likely to be back with their respective teams?
I think it's Jameis Winston. I don't think it's close. And you mentioned a new coach being brought in. Bruce Arians was brought in to try to fix Jameis Winston. I think there was, you know, kind of some belief that he would get it done. And even though he hasn't totally fixed him, there have been moments where you say, okay, hey, this looks better. You know, when you look at the situation in Tennessee, look, Marcus Mariota has been benched for Ryan Tannehill. I don't believe that there's a coach there that feels like he can fix Marcus Mariota, which is drastically different than the situation in Tampa. So I think there are some that believe that, you know, even without this drastic turnaround, that we will see Jameis Winston again as the starting quarterback in Tampa Bay.
Well, I would agree. And I think in Tennessee, once they've made that decision to move on, it just doesn't seem like we're going to see a course reversal.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I'm not sure we see Marcus at all this season.
So there you go. Some interesting comments from Tim Hasselbeck, who, kind of like our discussion with Adam Schefter, you know, you listen to him every week with us. Tim is well-connected. Tim talks to a lot of people. Tim does not go on there and do hot takes on ESPN. He talks to a lot of people. He's well informed. And I don't know about you guys, but the thing that stood out to me is those comments of their coaches in the building that don't believe they can fix Mariota.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting thing, because I tend to agree, I think they're going to go with Tannehill until the path takes them
unless
in a different
it just
direction.
Completely crumbles and falls apart.
Which you never know. It could happen. But I brought up the Riley Neal situation at Vanderbilt. It was so interesting because you would have thought once they made that decision for Mo Hassan that's it, right? It's over. And then all of a sudden he finds himself right back in there. So Mariota does have to be ready because he's one play away, right? It could happen. Tannehill's had plenty of injuries in his career. You never know what can happen.
I think, though, what you're getting out of that is Tim is saying – they were basically saying, who's got the best chance of coming? That was the question, right? Who's got the best chance of coming actually back?
Yeah.
And he said it's not even close.
Well, I think we would all agree, right?
But, I mean, I'm surprised, honestly, that the answer is either one of them. I mean, do we see Winston back in Tampa?
I don't know. I wonder.
Do they feel like they can win with him?
Do you think down there they're saying, well, Mariota's available now?
Well, no. I wonder.
And the Titans are going, well, maybe we can try Winston. Yeah, I mean, that.
I don't.
Where do they go?
I mean,
where will
I
they
know,
go?
But don't you think both?
They'll have a job somewhere.
Yeah.
Just because of even if it's a backup job, but where
well,
will
I'll
they
tell
go?
You, one of them would land. Okay, let me throw one out. That's a good question. Doesn't Cincinnati? Do you think they're like ready to move on? Like it's time.
Of
right?
course,
the Red Rifleman.
No question.
It's time to move on.
I could see
three
that
picks on Sunday.
Marcus.
I mean, Andy Dalton. I could see they're ready to move
of
on.
Of course,
the next chapter.
I could see that being a fit.
So
for Marcus,
what? I could see that for Winston.
Either one, but
AJ Green and Tyler Boyd and some
sure.
of their receivers.
Yeah.
Mixon in the backfield.
The thing that I think you have to wonder about, and you can apply this here, is with Tim throwing out what he said about that he thinks there could be coaches in the building that don't think they can change Marcus, they can't fix him. Did Bruce Arians go into the job in Tampa? Because he was retired. We know about the health issues. He could have been done. Did he go into that job going, all right, I truly believe that I can make Jameis Winston the franchise quarterback for the Tampa Bay Bucks? Or was the conversation, hey, I'll give it a shot for a year, but then you have to let me do what I do and get my guy
if it doesn't work? It's a fantastic question.
So was that the same question with Vrabel and Arthur Smith and those inside the Titans and John Robinson of, okay, we're surrounding him with weapons, the best team that he's had. We give it a year, one more year on the contract, and then Amy Adams Strunk, if it doesn't work, you let us move on.
Yeah, it didn't feel that way because of you've heard me bring this up, kind of the snarky remarks that Mike Vrabel said at the first press conference, basically poking fun at the last staff. That sounds like a staff that's saying, hey, we can fix this guy. They couldn't do anything
with
him.
And maybe they thought that.
But maybe wait till you see what we do with him. That's what it feels like.
And truthfully, I thought that.
Now, in fairness, maybe that's because it was Matt LaFleur.
Mm-hmm. I thought Matt LaFleur, with his background and who he's worked with, could come in here and make Marcus Mariota better. I thought that.
Aaron Rodgers is on an MVP pace.
Yes.
Okay? With Matt LaFleur.
With his star receiver out.
Marcus Mariota threw 11 touchdowns last year with Matt LaFleur.
Right.
Who's now who got a head coaching job. And we loved dealing with Matt LaFleur, but I mean, I'm going to be the first. I'm not going to be a phony about it. I was like, he is not getting the Packers job. Okay? It's not time. He'll get his time to be a head coach one day. It's not now. And I was wrong. And right now, they're off to a great start. They're the favorite going into Kansas City, even though the word is Mahomes is practicing.
Yeah.
Is he going to play?
Limited. No, it's just
like
he's limited.
Not playing. Come on, right?
No, I think he's just able to do some things.
It's too bad. Like, how big would that game be if it was Mahomes, a healthy Mahomes versus Aaron Rodgers, right? That would be the game of the week.
Yeah.
Monster ratings. But it's
Coach
not
Andy Reid said Chiefs quarterback Pat Mahomes would throw some today and the team would see if he could do more than individual drills. So they're just.
I guess to answer your question about here, I think that they went in going, and this is just obviously my opinion, just trying to read the room. Mike Vrabel went in like, yeah, they didn't know how to use him correctly. We will. We'll do this and we'll do that. Like I said, I always reference because I thought it was – I didn't think you needed to go down that road. First of all, you got the job, man. You don't need to be making fun of the last staff. And by the way, you haven't done a better job than the last staff with Mario.
No, he has.
And so there was no reason to throw those little jabs at them. But that sounds like somebody that's saying, hey, we'll be better with him. It doesn't sound like somebody like he's got a year or he's out of here. It seems like
– But that's this year. He's been here 2 years now. Yeah,
I understand
When he took the job, okay, should he have said it in the press conference? No, because you're setting yourself up. But when you're in the interview with John Robinson and Amy Adams Strunk, hell yeah, you say that because that's why you're trying to get the job.
Of course. No question about
it. That is the attitude you have to have of, yeah, you got rid of that guy. You got rid of that guy because he wasn't getting the job done.
Well, don't think John Robinson didn't take the general manager job knowing that he had to keep Mike Mularkey. Wasn't right. His choice.
Right.
If you accepted that job, you had to have Mike Mularkey as the coach. That's coming from the owner, okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't of, hey, you know, if you want to hire your guy. No. If you want to be the general manager here, you will have Mularkey as your coach.
And she fired Wisenhunt because of the quarterback, because she felt that he was going to get the quarterback hurt.
Yeah. I know. So. Now, did things change after a year of Mariota? I'm sure they had the, because they went out and acquired Ryan Tannehill. I'm sure that was the conversation of Robinson and Vrabel going, we need to have a better plan behind Mariota. One, he's always hurt, and two, is there somebody that we could get more production out of? Now, when we were tossing things around, I said I could see Winston. In Cincinnati, that would be an interesting fit. You said Mariota. I think Mariota, honestly, if Bridgewater were to leave and parlay this into a Nick Foles, Case Keenum moment where he lands a starting gig somewhere, Marcus as a backup in New Orleans with Peyton?
Yeah.
Although, you know what? They may be saying, we're going to keep Bridgewater around, and he's just going to be the next guy, the incumbent to Drew Brees.
I think there are two really good fits. If he wants to try and have another shot of just reviving his career and everything, go back up Mahomes in Kansas City, work with Andy Reid for a year. I think that would do wonders for him. And then Philadelphia.
That's another – I mean, what, Kansas Doug City, Peterson. That's a good
yeah. – But work with Doug Peterson.
Yeah. Yeah, those are all – those are good choices.
I feel like for his the whole confidence conversation, he needs to go into it, and I know no quarterback wants to do this, but he needs to go into it and say, you know what, I'm going to go be a backup. That's probably the best-case scenario, and go to a really good coach that you can learn a lot from, because that's been – you know, that's been his problem. He's learned different things from different style coaches. Wisenhunt tried to make him something he wasn't. And I've even heard people throw out, does he go to L.A. and back up Rivers? I don't think going back to Wisenhunt is what he needs to do, because Wisenhunt tried to make him something that he wasn't. He tried to make him like a Phillip Rivers, and that's not Marcus. So I think he's in the position that he's in some cases because of that. So Andy Reid is the quarterback whisperer. You know, Doug Peterson has shown he's pretty good at it too. And even Frank Reich, if you want to throw that in there, in Indianapolis. There are options for him to try and revive his career.
Just thought that was interesting that Tim Hasselbeck said, these coaches in Nashville, they don't believe they can fix Mariota.
Mm-hmm. I think I could see there being truth to it. Definitely.
Well, I think at this point, the writing, it's pretty evident. Right, I don't think that was any earth-shattering thing. Like, I think you're beyond trying to fix him. I think it's basically, if we have to play him again, can we just have to deal with that when we get there? Let's just concentrate on getting the best out of Tannehill at this point. I mean, that's pretty obvious at this point, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. And obviously,
I think they made their assessment.
They were obviously
okay,
desperate
at this point,
too. They needed.
We're
a win.
Not in a mode of, hey, there's still another level there. Let's find it. It's kind of like, okay, we've tried.
Yeah.
Let's try something else.
Yeah. I would agree. I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they know a lot of you out there have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there who is front and center on that quest and helping you as we all get older. His wife, Daphne Lodge, is the registered nurse. They're experienced staff. Want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life, and I hope you want that like I do. And their services have already helped a ton of you here in the Middle Tennessee area and the surrounding areas with improving your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There's no better time to achieve that healthy lifestyle than right now. What are you waiting for? Make that appointment by dialing 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or you can always visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. I guess we've got a theme going today. Chris Mason, Willie's partner in the television booth, joins us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. So we'll kick off the fourth and final hour with C-Mace. Looking
I went up
forward
and saw
to
him last night. Went up to the booth, made sure everything was good.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Chase walk up there. Yeah. Pay a little visit.
Do you know why he did that?
Yeah.
That was quick. Yep.
Well, okay. Mace sees me and he goes, oh, constable, do we have citations or what's going on? You don't come up here a lot. And I'm like, just patrolling.
You knew you had to. You had to basically hand deliver a message.
I had to ask Willie a question, and there are only so many times during a game that you can ask Willie a question.
It needed to be in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did. Yeah. But I saw Mace in the process, so it was good. Looking dapper.
Yes! That was a quick snapback. Now, one of the things, so we're going to get into what happened last night. A fantastic game at Bridgestone where the Predators just absolutely mauled the Ducks last night 6-1. So we're going to get into all that. But also last night was game one of the World Series in Houston. Saw J.J. Watt and his fiance there in attendance. They had good seats. Because it's good to be J.J. Watt.
It's great to be J.J. Watt.
Okay, let me say that again.
It's got a lot
great,
of pull.
It's great to be J.J. Watt.
He's got a lot of
things going for him.
In the city of Houston.
He does have a lot of things going for him. They were at the game. And if you've ever heard us talk about anything to do with baseball and young stars, we've talked about baseball needs to get with the times and lock up these young guys. How many times have you heard me bring up Juan Soto? That cat is ridiculous. He's 20.
It's part of the reason why they stood firm on their offer to Bryce Harper and basically said, this is what we're going to offer you, and if you want to leave, okay, because we feel like we can survive. And they have survived and then some.
Then thrived.
Yeah. Now the question is for the Nationals. Of course, hey, if you win the World Series, it's all good regardless. But
you're right.
Anthony Rendon is now the guy that they have to invest in. But Soto is off the charts good. That was an incredible home run last night.
He
opposite field to the railroad tracks.
Fun to watch that guy, that kid. I mean, he's a young man, but
20
man,
years old.
20. Couldn't even go out last night and enjoy it legally.
Technically.
I mean, that's why I said legally. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that he didn't go out or didn't.
But
I'm just saying legally.
Listen, it's a remarkable run by the Nationals, and it's really been Rendon and Soto that have been the horses in the middle of the lineup that have gotten so many big hits, not just in the playoffs, but in the regular season. They have picked up the slack for not having Harper in the middle of it, and then, of course, the starting pitching. So last night, the Nationals put a lot of eggs in winning that. Once they had an opportunity to win, they went all in to get that.
Corbin
they got
in.
It. Yeah, they used Corbin. They used all their relievers. Yep. They started going to the well
right.
in the seventh inning, and they lived to tell about it. Also, the thing that jumped out at me, and I didn't get to see anything but the last few innings. I saw a lot of the recaps of the game, but George Springer, that was a Ronald Acuna. George Springer is a great player, but in the World Series, to have that happen, that just shows you the little things mean so much. The situation is there's one out in the eighth inning. You're down by two. He hits a ball off the wall that absolutely should be a triple. If he's sprinting, he's a fast runner, he's a center fielder. But he did the Sammy Sosa, Ronald Acuna, I think it might be gone, and I'm shuffling and I'm not running. What? How can you do that in the World Series? I don't get it. And he doesn't have a reputation of loafing or something, but these habits of you just assume the ball's going out, where does that come from?
Yeah,
I guess the ball does go out most of the time, the way the home runs are being hit, but this is the World Series, man. If you're on third with one out as the tying run, that is huge in terms of a difference between being on second and being on third with one out. With the sacrifice fly, there's so many ways you could score with one out if you're on third. That's the tying run. That was a big, big mistake.
Yeah. It may have cost him. I mean,
who knows how the series will go from here, but
it's crazy. I know it's only one game.
They might be good enough to win the World Series anyway, even after losing that game. But
well, it's not like you lose the first game, you're doomed. I mean,
right.
But still, it's the World Series, they got, man.
But it puts more pressure on them tonight.
Well, the significance is they beat Cole. And as we talked about yesterday, he hasn't lost since May.
May 22nd.
I mean, there is some significance to that. Is nobody thought the Astros were going to lose with Cole on the mound, and they did.
And if you beat them, you're thinking Scherzer's going to outdo them 1-0 or 2-1.
Right?
They got some runs off of Cole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would guess that Houston ties it up tonight. I mean, one would think with Verlander going up against Strasburg, but the Nationals just aren't going away.
Hey, Strasburg, he can dominate.
Yeah.
He can dominate.
The Nationals are showing everybody like, oh, yeah, you wrote us off and didn't think we were supposed to be here. They beat the Dodgers, and now they're up one game to nothing on the Astros. So
here's the mystical thing, too, and who knows? But the whole thing about the clubhouse and the assistant GM, I do wonder if that, the karma of that, the whole Osuna thing, it's not Osuna's fault.
Has it been good for front offices in the city of Houston when it comes to the sports franchises couple of weeks?
They bungled that like you wouldn't believe. It's one thing for the guy to shoot off at the mouth in a very irresponsible way. But the double whammy is that they tried to cover it up and like, hey, this is an article. That didn't happen like that. And the media rallied and said, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
She's telling the truth. I was there. I saw it. It was just as bad as she described it. It happened exactly that way. And they had to then do a turnabout and say,
"Well, what do you think happens?" So there has to be fallout. I mean, there.
I just wonder if anybody will hire that guy as a GM now.
Right, and he was
that was a big.
He was way up on the list,
notch
right?
Against
he was well,
you would have to think.
Well, and it should good. It should.
Yeah.
If that happened, it should cost him.
I mean, and then the PR staff.
What an idiot! Like, how can that guy be? You know, a guy that people are saying, hey, he's getting ready to get his shot to be the next. I mean, what a moron to do that. I got to be honest. That is just so idiotic in today's climate. Ever, but I mean, but now, yeah. Especially. To do something like that, I mean, and to think that that guy is what other teams were revering as, hey, he's gonna be a GM here soon? Really? Acting like that, I wouldn't want him running my franchise.
Because here's what I think. I don't think, like, on the surface, you'd say, well, what does that have really to do with how the players go about their business or the fans? But doesn't that just give you an icky feeling when one of
if
your guys
you are
does
a
that?
General manager, there's more than just picking players or drafting players or signing players.
Oh, yeah.
But you're representing an organization.
But I agree. But I'm just talking about for this World Series, right? You just put an icky feeling on everybody's mind that is sitting there. Now, maybe nobody's thinking about it, but I don't know. If I'm an Astros fan, I have to be very disappointed when I see that. Like,
and just
that's one of our guys.
And to remember, like, the backlash and what people were saying when they made that signing to get through all of that, and there hasn't been any issues.
No.
And then you do that.
And that was kind of the point of the article is, you know, it's never going away. It's always going to be there.
What a
so
moron.
We'll see.
I mean
maybe the Nationals just have that it, you know, where the bounces go their way. That's part of baseball. The mystical side.
Looks like the Cubs have found their man.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it's going to be who we thought all along. I thought they'd gone away from him because it's like it was David Ross, and then it got quiet. Then you didn't hear anything about David Ross, and then you start hearing all these other candidates, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess the David Ross thing that we all just thought was like Joe, right?
Looks like
Madden
a
to the Angels was the no-brainer. It's like, okay, done. It happened. And so it's been quiet for a while, and I'm like, well, I guess it's not Ross. Like
he suspected. He looks like the classic former catcher that would make a great manager. Yeah, well, he just looks like he'd be perfect.
Well, he's got the job now.
Well, and he's following a trend, too, that he retires and does what?
Go to the booth,
does TV, and then he gets a managerial job. Yeah. Gabe Kepler did it. Aaron Boone has now done it. David Ross. I mean, yeah. It seems to be a theme. Is A-Rod next?
Although I would say that, you know, for all this that, you know, catchers, there has not been a good run on catchers to manager. Brad Ausmus, Theny, Girardi got fired. I mean,
Girardi
Ausmus
won a World
Series. Ausmus and Theny won a lot of games.
Agreed. I didn't say I agreed with, but he got fired.
Yeah, but
they went to the playoffs and he got fired.
Right. Is he going to be the Mets next manager?
Over time, take a look at all of the ex catchers who have gone on to be managers for a long time: Bochy, Girardi. I mean, you can just the list goes on for a long. Bob Garrett. I mean, there's a ton of them. Melvin.
Lance Parrish.
Yeah.
In the minors.
Where is Lance? He's still
I don't know.
In the minors?
He was here.
I know.
We used to deal with
Mike
him all
Socha.
The time. And
we
then
did,
he
we
was.
Check on that. Check in
and
on
then
him.
He went away to go do a minor league team, a single A up in Michigan.
No, double
I think.
A.
Was it double A?
I think so. Yeah.
And I haven't heard anything since. So I don't know. We'll have to check on this.
Socha was a catcher, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour, and give you a chance to win something on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, the game. A little Duran, bringing us back. Nashville SC on the pitch over First Tennessee Park. First round of the USL playoffs this Saturday. Tickets are now available at NashvilleSC.com. Would you like to go? Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No boys in gold.
Yeah. All right, you answered yes. Caller 4-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 4. You'll win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC, First Tennessee Park. First round of the playoffs this Saturday. Another chance to win. this afternoon on Jared and the GM. So good luck. We're going to talk to Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. It was a lot of fun last night as the Predators beat up on the Ducks.
Always good.
Oh, yeah. What was interesting is Mikael Granlund came up last night for postgame in Barrel House. We were just kind of asking about how chippy it got in the third period, especially when the Predators were doing so well. And was this just because the Predators were kind of had their number last night and things were getting out of hand? Or was it because there's still kind of that bitterness between these two teams? And what do you think his answer was?
Still some bitterness.
He said that was the talk in the room. Still guys saying, hey, it's the Ducks, man.
I brought that same thing up to Dante Fabbro. And he paused, and I'm like, you haven't been here. I mean, you weren't a part of this.
Granlund hasn't either. But he was saying, but the guys in the room were definitely talking about
this matchup
because of the past.
Fabbro said it came up, that it was brought up. And, you know, it wasn't the focus, but it was definitely brought up that, hey, this is a rivalry game. You know, there have been a lot of battles between these two teams. And so I think when we always talk about confidence with the Preds and the penalty kill, you know, they had the shorthanded goal. That was huge last night. But to beat them 6-1, that's going to give them a lot of confidence and momentum moving forward.
I saw a blend in the Ducks' feel, which is I watched. They're trying to play differently. They're taking more chances offensively. They have a new coach. They're trying to change with the times. They're trying to move out some of the older players.
Not as much of the dark arts.
But they still have those guys who do the dark arts. You know,
they don't have Ryan freaking Kessler.
No, but Nick Ritchie, who is sort of a lesser known guy, is still the guy that, and he got the misconduct at the 8. Who was it? Was it Holzer that flipped the puck at Arvidsson? Mm-hmm. You know, Arvidsson was clearly getting under their skin. And hey, Victor Arvidsson is going to try to sell calls. Right when he gets knocked over, he goes down. I think it's debatable sometimes from the other team's perspective. Hey, should he have really gone down? And he's not alone. There's a lot of players that are just good at that, right? Mm-hmm. And he's going to stick his nose in there, and he is not going to stop doing what he does. And it was clearly frustrating the Ducks once the score got out of hand, and then they just tried to start taking it out on him. He must have drawn 3 or 4 penalties last night, and it got a little nasty at the end.
And Manson is obviously known for his big hits.
Yep.
He had 3 last night. I was looking to see that.
Well, they still have Getzlaff. He's a tough, hard-nosed guy.
Getzlaff was a little ornery there in the third period.
Sure.
You could tell he was
Kasha's a big physical player.
By the way, how about the save on Kasha?
You know,
that was
by Pekka.
I would say this. If you didn't see the game last night, or you just maybe watch the third period and you say, well, Predators blew them out, it's a little misleading, the 6-1, because the chances and the shots and the analytics, I think, were even at best at a certain point in the game and maybe leaning towards the Ducks. The Predators scored a 5-on-3 goal.
Mm-hmm.
They scored a goal where Colton Sissons comes out of the box and the puck comes right to him. He goes down and scores.
By the way, Hal Gill, Skillsy, told a great story because I asked him about coming out of the box, the art of coming out of the box, and he clipped himself once and fell onto the ice.
With the puck coming his way?
Yeah.
Oh,
Colton
man.
Sissons did not do that.
No, he did not.
Night.
No, he played perfect.
He did exactly what you're supposed to do.
But Pekka Rinne made 5 or 6 outstanding saves. He saved a breakaway on Kasha that you just referenced, Darren, a penalty shot.
Yep.
A couple of 2-on-1s. I mean, he made some great saves in tight with traffic all around him. The fact that Predators were up 3-0, 4-0, it could have easily swung a different way. But they were very opportunistic against a goalie that hadn't given up anything all year long. And Rinne was very, very sharp. So, good win. Very good win.
And he has been.
And the best part about the game to me was once Getzlaff scored, Anaheim's still playing. They're like, hey, we've done some good things here. We shouldn't be down 4-0. And, ooh, we got
30 seconds later. Goodbye.
They didn't get a shot the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Really?
Anaheim did not
have
a shot on goal. After the Getzlaff goal, that was it.
That was 4 minutes into the third.
Didn't have another shot.
the final 16 minutes?
Nope.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Zero.
Look, I think
11-0, and the Predators just closed the door, slammed it shut.
Yeah, and I think this is probably the most complete game they've played all season.
By the way, I that's something that did jump out at me. I thought it was – a lot of times you see, you know, more keep away, trying to just stall, take time up. I loved the push constantly. Yeah. The Predators were still pressing the action in the third, and they are in control. They are. It's 5-1, 6-1. And they are still pressing.
I thought they were more the counterattacking team for the first period and a half.
And they weren't when they had the big lead. I know. That's what was interesting.
Yeah. So you heard Peter Laviolette after the game sort of say, there's still plenty for us to work on defensively. That's still something they want to keep working on. And I heard a coach say it. I think it was Cassidy, the Bruins coach. I was watching the NHL Network. He said
they got a penalty shot, too. We didn't even talk about that. I mean, the game, to your point, the game could have been totally different. They had the Kasha breakaway. You had a penalty shot they didn't get.
That penalty on Yannick Weber, that was bad, too.
Bad call, you mean? Yeah,
no, I mean, he...
Well, it was the turnover. He's just like turnover. Basically going, I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Well,
to
puck, it was the puck, he got handcuffed, and then it was a worst-case scenario. But Pekka erased the mistake.
Sure.
But just the overall number of odd man rushes, that's still something that the Predators are working on. But Cassidy for Boston said, nothing's going to be perfect in October. That was a good statement. Fair. I think that most coaches would say you're still ironing out, making your pieces fit, working on your systems, and over time it should get better.
Although
but there's still plenty to work out.
He looks pretty good in October.
Well, it doesn't mean people aren't making great plays. I'm talking more of your team role definition, your team structure. We could talk to Mace about this.
The Bruins looked good last night.
They've looked great.
Okay. So they've looked good in October.
Oh, yeah. 6-1-2.
I think Cassidy's trying to play possum.
No, I think he's saying you can do well, but there's stuff to work on. There's plenty of stuff to work on.
The bottom line is
I think the Predators have looked good for the most part, but there's plenty to work on.
Is it fair to say you don't win or lose anything in October? True? In a hockey season?
I'd say
usually.
That's true.
Right?
All right. Well, you can dig a hole.
Well, yeah, you can definitely ask the Blues last year. They dug a hole. Wasn't just October. We'll come back. Chris Mason to kick off the fourth and final hour. And by the way, congratulations to Derek. Derek was lucky caller 4. Derek, go have fun. Nashville SC, First Tennessee Park on Saturday. Another chance to win this afternoon on Jared and the GM. Fourth and final hour next.